KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment, the home edition. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You know, I'd be hard-pressed to think of an actor who has come through on TV in the 21st century in three such different and powerful roles. Of course, we're talking about going from Grey's Anatomy to Killing Eve to her newest, The Chair on Netflix, in which she stars and is also one of the executive producers. I'm, of course, talking about and speaking to Sandra Oh. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Elvis. It's such a pleasure to speak with you.
In these three roles we're talking about, I think they're so interesting because they're in so many ways about and kind of an evolution of actors, and we're watching these three characters, and I can't help but think about their relationship to power and how that works in different ways for each of these three women.
You know, I never think of these characters like together in any kind of way. You know what I mean? So I was a bit confused of it. And are you asking, like, you see the character of Christina Yang, the character of Eve Pulaski, and the character of Jean Kim as an evolution of female power?
About their relationship to power, and each of them has a different relationship. And for each one, it's about, I think, how they kind of understand as a women of color what that means to them. And it's really explicit, in fact, in The Chair. I mean, it's called up all the time, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, I'll start with, like, you know, something like with Christina Yang from Grey's Anatomy. You know, I mean, like, it, she definitely started as the student. Do you know what I mean? And of course, 10 years into it, then she became, you know, the surgeon that she became. So she grew in her power. And then Eve Pulaski also comes in somewhat of the searching position, that she is, doesn't know all the answers and is trying to deal with the 12 or MI6 and is always an underling to the power. And Jian and Kim in the chair, while she comes, I will say, while she comes in a certain position of power as the chair of the English department, I think most deeply in your comment about being a woman of color in relationship with power, I think it's most clearly defined in the chair, and not so much defined or just grappled with in the chair, because the two previous, like in Grey's Anatomy and Killing Eve, the characters, we don't go into their cultural background. And that's just, I think, the sign of the times when the shows came about, and also just the content of it. And again, that just, I think, highlights how, for me, and I think also for the landscape, how different The Chair is and how the show takes on the challenges of what it is to be a woman of color in the position of power.
And all these places, they're all institutions in their ways, and that these characters are all kind of stepping up and defining themselves. And again, we got to see Christina evolve from being that sort of student to somebody who takes over an institution by the end of your run on the show. And with Eve, we're kind of watching the same way. She's feeling herself around where her life is literally at stake in a lot of this. But when we meet your character in the chair, she's sort of stepping up, and just thinking about that great sort of first scene she has with her staff, where she's told, you know, you can sit at the head of the table. And she thinks, and she says, yeah, I think I will. And I just sort of like that in the chair, it's really about negotiating all the politics of being in an institution.
Agreed. And I'm sure you've, I don't know if you have, but I know I have, because, you know, when you are on set and you're in any type of leadership role, you are having to deal, or any type of leadership role, you're having to manage so many fires and so many personalities and so many dynamics. So while managing that, trying to push your own goal forward and to have balance between the rules of the institution and then, you know, the makers, you know, you could say the studio and the artists, you're constantly having to shift. And I think that's what we see Ji-Yoon doing a lot. It's really, really hard work. There's this scene between Professor Kim and Yasmin McKay, played by Nana Mensah. So Yaz is the young Black professor who I am trying to push her tenure through. And we have this conversation where Yaz's character, you know, says to June, basically, you're running around like playing nice. You know what I mean? When you should be running this institution. And I just thought that was such, I thought that interchange for me is one of my favorite interchanges, because I felt like really for the first time, I felt like I was in a scene about two women of color who are different colors, who are talking about stuff in a way that I know that I have talked about it. From June's point of view, it's like, you are not yet in this position of power. And if that's your interpretation, that I am being nice when I'm really actually trying to make change for you and for us and for the greater good, I can really see how those two characters really misunderstood each other at that moment.
I like that too, because what's so much fun about the chair is that there's so much going on. And when that scene you're talking about really connects to that early scene I was talking about, where she's invited to go take her place at the head of the table, and mm-hmm. she sort of does it in a self-deprecating way rather than just sort of demanding it. And it's that kind of thing that if you're a person of color, especially a woman, there are always these kinds of questions that are being asked about you that you have to answer before you can even do your job.
Oh my God, yes. I'm sorry. I think I'm laughing so heartily at that because I feel, you know, being in this business for a while now, how much time I have spent trying to explain to people the Asian American experience. I'm going back to your point about how the interpretation of June saying, okay, I will take that. I will take the head of the table. And I'm actually just curious now of what people's interpretation of that is. Like, I am definitely playing it from the point of view of someone who is ready to take power. And I wonder if the interpretation is that she is self-deprecating, as you said.
But I thought part of it, too, is she thought, well, why can't this power be vested in me wherever I sit? Why does it have to be this kind of sort of ritualistic thing? But you can answer mm-hmm. this question, because that's what I was thinking in watching it. And it stuck with me. And in so many of these instances where she's kind of code-switching in real time and explaining herself, but also apprising people of the situation, as you were talking about what she does with Yaz. I mean, and I think to me that kind of watching this sort of thing where it's almost in subtitles for mainstream audiences is really, really great.
Oh, yeah. I think another one of my favorite scenes is when she's trying to explain to Yaz the compromises she's made and had to make to get her greater goal. And her greater goal is basically to get Yaz tenure. And what she has to compromise is that a distinguished lectureship that she had promised Yaz, she has to give to David Duchovny. And Yaz is rightly incensed. And June is trying to explain, not from the point of view of making excuses, but that this is as far as I could take this ball. It took me a lot to get you this far. Is to try and help her understand her position. But she also understands, you know, Yaz's position that she is being seen as upholding this institution that continues honoring and giving place to the white male patriarchy who's run the institution forever.
Yeah, I mean, I got to think that so much of this, of the chair resonates with you, because it's like you're saying, it's the kind of questions that you've been answering in one way or another and trying to sort of get past answering for your career.
Yes. Yes, because my answer ultimately to all that is the work. So let's just talk about the work. What is it like? Well, I just played her. Just watch the show. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, well, you want to know what it's like? Watch the damn show. That's what it's done humorously. And you know, what I really hope, you know, that people can get in that, in watching the show, is just wondering what would you do in that position? What would you do to be commanding respect or commanding power? You can't lead like that. That's not how you lead. All you can do is hopefully be true to yourself, and your intentions kind of flow through. That's what I'm trying to do with Gian. But everyone has their interpretation of her and what she's trying to do. And it's absolutely through their own lens. Yaz has her point of view and Joan has her point of view that June is not sticking up for her or not paying attention to her. And what she's trying to do is spend most of her time defending Bill. But in June's point of view, that is the biggest fire that she has to put out.
This is the treatment. My guest who's telling us to watch the damn show is Sandra Oh. She's starring in The Chair on Netflix. This is a good place to describe a little bit what's happening in the show. And Bill, you're talking about, who's played by Jay Duplass, is one of your colleagues, a professor there, who's got himself in some trouble by being baldly politically incorrect in response to another problem that he set into motion. I was almost thinking about an old TV show like MASH, where a character like Bill would have been Hawkeye Pierce, who could just cruise through the world and say whatever he wanted to say. And as long as he's being funny, it would be okay that he was making fun of power, not realizing that he's part of the power structure he's making fun of.
Oh, beautifully put. I would say beautifully put. And, you know, the role of Bill Dobson played by the phenomenal Jay Duplass, I got to tell you, like, hats off to him. I am a huge fan of that guy. One of my favorite lines that June says to him is that, no, Bill has a lot to, I don't want to say learn, that's not the right word, but he has a lot to realize. And you're right that I feel like he does present as that type of character who, like Hawkeye Pierce, who's kind of charmed in that way. And he's charmed without really understanding his privilege and position. And June is extremely heightened aware of it. And she says this line to him. It's like, I don't be one of those people, those men who just kind of go through life thinking that things like this can happen and you can just brush it off like there are no consequences. That's what Bill really gets through this piece, is that there are consequences and he has to take them. He has to take those consequences. I'm not saying right or wrong, but he's a part of the consequence. He's a part of making it. Like, it's what he is going to do is going to deepen the ship. No, this is a terrible metaphor. I was going to say right the ship, but it's not. It's either going to deepen the conversation or not.
What you're talking about is something I so often think about with characters you play, and I think of this as being kind of specific to you. You bring this kind of self-awareness that they're almost doomed about having, no matter what the circumstance. Then that self-awareness comes from this wave of empathy, and we can even go back to Double Happiness. And I was thinking about that in the context of The Chair, just because you play frustration in almost the same way all this time later. I mean, I just think about the way she dealt with her younger sister in Double Happiness and the way that Ji-Yoon deals with her daughter in The Chair. It's the same kind of thing. How do I talk to you when you're not listening to me?
Oh, my God. Thank you. To have seen the work and have that interpretation, I'm really touched by that. And regarding frustration and how I think it's what I love about these characters is that they're very smart. And I think they're very human, that they don't understand. I think that we all encounter why the world is not working my way. And what's, I'd say, a really beautiful part of The Chair is Jean's relationship with Juju, her daughter. Amanda and I talked so much about that in our wish for a new interpretation of mother and mothering and parenting, I should say, just parenting, that you have, again, someone who is highly competent and highly successful in many ways, and that she is really stumped by her six-year-old and feels adrift and doubtful of herself because of it. I think that's just the path you have to take as a parent.
Yeah, but there's something so elemental about that kind of frustration, that was somebody who is smart and is used to dealing with smart people. But again, I just thought about that, the way the character in Double Happiness is with her younger sister. And it's really interesting to sort of see that kind of honesty resonate throughout your career for this period.
I just play frustrated characters. I don't know what that says about my inner state, that I seem to choose frustrated characters. But
well, no, it's about the way you play frustration. We're going to delve more into this. My guest is Sandra Oh, who's starring in The Chair on Netflix, which she's also executive producing. This is The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking frustration on The Treatment with my guest, Sandra Oh, who's starring in The Chair on Netflix. Guy, there's so much to talk about here, because I don't know if you remember when we met, but it was shortly after you'd done this play at the Public that I can't stop thinking about now in these times that we're in, this play about somebody who's brutalized because of intolerance that you did at the Public in the late 90s.
Correct. It's Diana Sun's Stop Kiss. That was, you're right. That was like in 99. Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about that when I met you, and I can't help but think about how we're at a time now where that play really feels resonant to me.
Oh, true, in so many ways. So Stop Kiss is a beautifully constructed play, beautifully, deeply felt play by Diana Sun, that you just see these two women who like kind of come to New York. One is a newcomer to a New York, the other is an established New Yorker. And they're all intents and purposes, you know, straight women. And they have this time together and they realize that they're falling in love. And the play is centered around a hate crime that is instigated by their first kiss. You want to know what, Ellis? I got to tell you, that's what Amanda Peet saw me in. Amanda has told me that. She goes, I never knew her then. She saw me in Stop Kiss, and she's spoken about it. You know, you have fellow artists whose work moves you, and you don't know what or whatever that is. And I think that might have been a moment where she was like, oh, who is that? And then, you know, Amanda and I actually did a short film together like a gazillion years ago. And then many years later, you know, it meant a lot to me that she saw that play. And from that point on, you know, you get embedded in other people's minds.
And you're talking about Amanda Peet, who's one of the creators of The Chair. And I was even thinking about that in light of the way there's a big sort of town meeting with Bill's character and the students. And, you know, just that play is about the way a truth will resonate differently with other people. Everybody tries to explain it in their way, but as they do, let's think about especially all the men in Stop Kiss, how it doesn't quite make sense to others as they try to talk about it. And I was thinking about the play and watching that episode in which Bill is, as you were saying in the first half of the show, has to sort of step up and account for who and what he is.
Agreed. Now I'm just thinking about the play. You're right. The way that it also is constructed, it is like from different, a bunch of people's different point of view. And it's actually the very last moment where you see the love between the two women expressed. One of the many things that I like about The Chair is that you're seeing different people's point of view from this one incident that Bill does, that happens in Bill's class. And hopefully you're seeing it from the student's point of view, from the TA's point of view, Jian's point of view, Bill's point of view, and the dean's point of view. See, I mean, that's where we are right now. You know, everyone's interpretation is everyone's first reality. And people going down that road in any kind of a hard line makes a conversation pretty difficult.
Well, yeah, and that's why I found myself thinking about Stop Kiss, and I'm sure this is, people brought this up to you before, but I just sort of thought, wow, this is the same kind of thing where, I mean, Stop Kiss is condensed, obviously, and we're actually sort of learning about the events through these different characters' points of view, as you're saying, but here, because we get to know Jiyun and how incredibly empathetic she is, at some point she wants us to explain something to everybody because people are so sort of lost in their lives that she becomes a person who kind of goes, well, this and this are happening, and the world can have two complex thoughts at once. The climax of all that, those intersecting points of view, is that. And she still has to be the person who she becomes because she is so empathetic, the person who explains to Bill what's going on, because he still can't see it, even after he's been kind of hoisted by his own petard.
I think at the end, he understands the stakes and what he's about to lose. I do think he does. In that pivotal scene, basically, when Bill is called before the dean and the board, for me, that scene ends up being about poetry. It ends up, for me, being about why both of those characters do what they do, which is their love of literature, or their love of poetry, and their love of teaching. They are also falling in love with each other. They're also falling in love with each other. but it's their understanding that what needs to go on is the literature. What needs to go on is the teaching. And that, I think, is what ultimately Ji-Yoon chooses in that scene. Because right after that, I also thought very correctly, dramaturgically, we don't see Professor Kim teach until the end. We kind of see all the other professors kind of in their classrooms, but we actually don't see Ji-Yoon until the end. And I really like that, because after you see someone valiantly trying to perform this role of basically like administrator, you actually get to see her in her element, which is teaching, which is expressing and sharing the literature, the poetry. And I just really thought that was really, really important.
For a long time, the relationship that Ji-Yoon and Bill have are teacher and student. And we even get to see Bill kind of marooned at the beginning when his daughter's going off to college, and he's had this tragedy occur in his life that in a weird way is kind of, he's reminded of during the incident that leads to him being in trouble. And that thing I'm talking about, of sort of like having empathy, but also having to explain what's right in front of people versus all the repercussions that are around it, are what I think a great professor does, sort of taking a piece of literature or poem and telling us how it resonates for us, but also reminding us of where it comes from. And I guess that's why I was reminded of Stop Kiss, just because I feel like there are these, sometimes these skipping stones in the culture and in art. And for someone to have had the kind of career that you've had and to be able to in some way revisit that, the unfortunate part is that that has not gone away. It's just we now can maybe ask kinds of questions that we couldn't ask about it 20 years ago. And again, I just found myself thinking about that in watching this.
I deeply remember all the characters that I've played that, you know, have really been important to me. I remember them, but I also really let them go. Do you know me? There's a lot that I let go because I don't spend time thinking about my career, the characters in context with each other.
You should. It's the treatment, by the way. We're talking about the incredible career of my guest, Sandra Oh, who's currently starring in The Chair on Netflix. I think with any artist, what you do is you're creating work based on who you are. There's a kernel of truth in it. And so often these characters that you've created, I think they really resonate for people. It's why I talked about these three roles you played in the last few years that so resonate with people. It's about these women and their relationship to power, and who they are and who they want to be, and how these institutions can kind of thwart that in some way. And I think it's remarkable that what you've done, and you're talking about these characters, that I think they stick with you for the reasons that we're talking about.
I could not even begin to express how profoundly on a cellular level I am in these characters, all of them. Not like that's me. It's not like that at all. We're not talking straight lines at all. But in ways that I would never reveal wholly, I have such an intimate relationship with them. You know, I think it's also like, I feel like my work changed early days of Grace. I just started growing in my own relationship with myself as an artist. And my relationship with these characters just became so much deeper, but not, I can't say in a direct way. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not a chair of an English department. I am not actually running around, you know, trying to take down a power conglomerate called the 12, you know what I mean? And like running away from an assassin. I'm not doing that, but all those things that you are talking about, let's just say these three characters in their relationship with power, I obviously I'm struggling to speak about it because it's so entwined with me on just like such a deep, deep level. Like the amount that I feel like I invest and I invested in all those characters is also the profound joy of my job. You know what I mean? Like you have the ability to live these lives. You get a chance. And this is also what I really love about television. You get so many chances to tell the story, not just one 90-minute story. You know what I mean? You get chance after chance to live this life and to try and unlock the mystery of this character's life. Did you see Millennium Actress? Do you remember that anime film? Right?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yes. I got to tell you, I don't remember when that came out, but there's sometime whenever that I saw that, that was a time where I felt like my relationship with my work started shifting because from what I remember from that movie, it's like it follows this camera crew or whatever, or asking this famous Japanese actress just about her life. And she kind of revisits all her roles. And I think of this in a kind of Buddhist psychology kind of way, where you see that she is trying to unravel a mystery, like, but basically this deep curse that she has someone put on her, a witch put on her, whatever. And that with each role that she takes on, she is trying to unravel this mystery or this curse. Basically, one of my meditation teachers said to me once, he goes, it's just very interesting what you do as your profession. It's like you get to play life after life after life. And it just shifted my appreciation for characters. What you're really trying to do is that does not have to do with you, but has to do with you, but does not have to do with you is how do I serve this character? Why is she here? What is she trying to say? How can I do this for her? One of the things that I'm very proud of in Grey's Anatomy is like, oh, you have I had a 10-year period to do it. People change in 10 years, but also people stay the same. And I really felt like I was able to grow that with Christina Yang, that you really believe change. And that's also what I'm trying to do now, closing up Killing Eve. I'm here in London, is that you've seen the character of Eve actually change. And of course, you see that happen to Jian, you know, in those 6 episodes. But it's such a great profession. I can tell you, I really, really love my job. And I really, really love being able to do that because it's like when I see then like people in like the business community or leadership community, or when I get texts from friends who are people of color, who are in leadership roles, or ex-professors or whatever, who went through like crazy cancel culture kind of stuff. And they text me to say, this is how I felt seen, or this meant so much to me. I'm not being very clear here, but it all fits for me.
That's as clear as you can get, I think. I can only say we're out of time. Please come back and do the show again, Sandra. You're welcome here whenever you like.
Oh, it's good to talk to you.
Yeah, maybe we can try and do it less than every 20 years. My guest is Sandra Oh. Yeah, man, she's starring in an executive producer for this series, The Chair on Netflix. She's been very gracious with her time today, and I thank her. Recording engineer, part of our production staff at KCRW, is Desmond Taylor, who's often joined by John Meek and Paul Smith. Our show's produced and edited by Rebecca Mooney. To better days, everybody. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.